Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome back to Going In Raw. Special edition, Last Ride, Chapter 1 review. I can't quit this game, Larson.
Yeah.
They won't let me.
We had a question at one point at what wrestler is most like Randy the Ram from The Wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if either of us said The Undertaker, but in terms of the hold this business has on one Mark Calloway, it's pretty strong.
That seems to be the theme of certainly I would have this series because the finality with which people perceive that Mania 33 match,
mm-hmm.
and then of course how we know that wasn't the case is probably one of the more interesting threads in certainly the first chapter, and I think it's probably going to run through however many. Do we know how many episodes this is?
I don't know if they've announced. I know the time frame I believe listed was 2017 to 2020. The Undertaker had people following around capturing footage for stuff. It's a scenario where he walks into this saying early on this first episode, effectively, I want to walk away before the tank's empty.
Yes.
And then when he has a moment at WrestleMania 33, where it seems like, and like the whole lead up to the match, he's like, I'm not 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's at the Rumble that year.
That too, yeah.
At the Rumble that year, he said he had no business being in that match.
Okay, so did you think he was referring to that Rumble match or the Mania match? Because the Rumble was the setup for it, and he said,
they were showing B-roll from the Rumble while they were doing it, so I just thought it was that, but you know, maybe it was a Mania match.
Because he also talked later on, he was like, you know, every time I'm in a match, there's a young guy who's there every week who doesn't get a spot.
But Mania, he said, and so since I'm there on Mania, I got to make sure essentially I earn my spot.
Yeah.
I put forth the effort and the performance that justifies my spot on the card.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So you know, his general idea is I want to walk away before I the tank is empty, and then you know. They showed the preview for episode 2 where he's watching that Mania match at 33 and thinks it sucks.
You know, with the exception, because they specifically show, and they made a point of showing the botch. The big botch was supposed to be
the tombstone spot, yeah.
The tombstone reversal, which, yes, was a mess. But I remember thinking about that match. Well, he wasn't moving great,
no.
But it was about as good as a match as you could expect. I still haven't seen the match that he had at Extreme Rules. I think it was a tag match with Roman, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that was fun.
And I've heard good things about it.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. And so you get to the pickle he's in, it felt to me, where you could look at that Mania 33 match and it seemed like at a certain point he felt that way, where, you know, because apparently Michelle McCool is under the understanding that was it for him.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like other people may have had the idea as well that he was walking away after that,
including one AEW former AEW champion, Chris Jericho.
Yes. And for him, and I understand the perspective, like you want to walk out knowing you have some stuff in the tank so people remember you at your best, not at your worst.
Mm-hmm.
When he mentioned that too, where he didn't want to be out there in the ring where some dude with his kid and the dad would lean over and said, he used to move way better than this. He used to do more than this. He used to be, you know, he was the Undertaker.
If you could have seen him,
not the shell of what he used to be. But then you go forth and you lay, in his estimation, an egg at WrestleMania. Well, I don't want to go out that way.
Yeah.
So he, at the end of this episode, is like, now it's redemption.
Mm-hmm. The problem is, man, you start digging yourself into a hole because it's not going to get. You could try to make it better. I mean, they show some very graphic surgery footage from the episode coming up.
Yeah,
that's going to be hard to watch. But like, okay, so you repair your body, you go for the last one match. But there's also, I wonder, my big question is, are they going to talk about, because come on, man, this can't exclusively be about him wanting the final Undertaker match. There has to be an element of the Saudi Arabian government is paying a ton of money here. I would hope that they address that, because realistically, I mean, that's got to be a huge part. I don't know what proportion of it is ensuring my legacy versus the monetary aspect.
Ensuring my financial future.
Ensuring I've got fat stacks.
I mean, if that was his house he was doing that interview stuff in, I don't feel like, I mean, that looked pretty nice.
Yeah, I don't know if he paid cash for it, though. I've got a mortgage.
I mean, I'm guessing he could have paid it off easily after the first Saudi show.
You would think so. You would think so.
But he's in a situation, though, where I would suspect, given how he says his mindset is in this first episode, where he has a good match and thinks, all right, I could do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Has a bad match. Well, I don't want to leave that way.
Yeah.
So he can always seem like it. Edge talks about this, where it's hard to tell. I think Stone Cold did too.
Edge
it's hard to tell when it's time to walk
sure.
away. Yes, yes. And so, regardless of how the match turns out, he can convince himself that he can do another one. Mm-hmm. And it totally shows with the Goldberg match at that one Saudi show, and then the Extreme Rules match that happened shortly thereafter, where he went out there with an obvious chip on his shoulder, wanted to show everybody that he still had it. That the reason that match sucked wasn't because of The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It totally felt like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The episode, the first chunk of the episode was an interesting look at the idea that The Undertaker's schedule seemingly can be a lot more demanding than the full-time schedule. Obviously, there's the age, there's the wear and tear aspect of things. It's not like Undertaker could handle a full-time schedule right now, but the transition from a full-time schedule where, as Stone Cold puts it, your body is calloused. Your body understands the wear and tear aspect of things and prepares itself and is able to sort of, you know, armor itself with bruises and bumps and calluses and stuff like that. Whereas the Taker schedule is, your body softens. It doesn't get used to the wear and tear. So, like, you know, the idea of 200 small car crashes as opposed to one major car crash a year is a lot different. That one major car crash can do a lot more damage, because when he's on that schedule, it's, you go through the match, you get the surgery to fix what you had coming into the match, and then you rehab. And then you get prepared for the next match, and then a year's done, and you go through a match, and it's over and over again.
Yeah.
It hurt to watch him walk leading
up to WrestleMania
33.
Like, when he was limping around, trying to get through the hotel, looks like the conference room they had set up for the wrestlers to check in, trying to walk backstage. It hurt. It hurt.
Yeah.
He had to get an injection in his knee before the match. It really hurt watching that. And, you know, and he seems conscious at this point in his career that
he's very self-aware.
He is very self-aware, and it makes me wonder when that pivot happened for him, because I can't think of really anybody within the last 30, 40 years that was so protective of his character and the public-facing aspect of that character to let their guard down so much. And it started a couple of years back. He started getting on social media. I don't know if that predated the filming of this, which started in 2017. But he seemed to grow bit by bit more comfortable with the idea of saying, yeah, Undertaker, that's the character I play on TV. I'm Mark Calloway. Longest time, when he was out in public, he was the Undertaker.
I would suspect, this is just pure speculation, I wonder if, or I guess I'll just phrase this as a question, I wonder if his series with Brock, when he came back after the 30 match, when he became that weird amalgam of the dead man, but that also he was doing a lot of MMA type stuff. Mm-hmm. He was more a brawler guy that seemed a bit more down to earth. I wonder if that's when mentally he was transitioning to, all right, at some point I'm going to have to break character. I'll be Mark Calloway, because that seemed to be more of an aspect of like him. I don't know, but it has been an interesting, or maybe it's just the understanding, man. Maybe it's just the understanding that this is going to be my income. I'm going to have to start accepting that my stories are going to be mm-hmm. my income 5 years from now, whenever this actually does take place, whenever I have my last match, you know, and I start booking StarCast, you know, that's going to be the thing, is going to be my storytelling.
Yeah. But also, I mean, he's gotten to the point now where his legacy won't be enhanced by whatever he does in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
His skills aren't what they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way, maybe perchance now, to build upon the legend, The Undertaker, is to let the curtain down
mm-hmm.
and to let people see the man behind the character
and
remain, you know, obscured for so long.
And more importantly, control what's out there.
Yeah.
Because if you stop wrestling, your legend is going to be told by other people mm-hmm. if you don't tell it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that's probably something he's cognizant of. You want to make sure that you're controlling the narrative so you can get the most money and, you know, make sure that your legacy remains intact.
Yeah, totally. There's some interesting details about that Mania 30 match you just mentioned about the concussion. And he relates that injury back to what you mentioned about the Undertaker schedule, and that his body was not prepared for that level of physicality on a regular basis. So he more or less said, if I was working a regular schedule, I don't know if that concussion would have happened effectively.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, blame maybe the severity of the concussion on wrestling once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you know, we had heard that Vince accompanied him to the hospital following that injury. I didn't hear anything about Brock going there too.
I had never heard that either. And that was such a throwaway, you know, Michelle said, you know, mm-hmm. Vince was there and Brock was there. And then, you know, they were testing. I was like, whoa, Brock was there? Really? That's cool.
Yeah. 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 That was interesting.
I mean, honestly, to be so much, like, what I found most fascinating with this was simply the behind the scenes, the backstage stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The moment that I loved of that the most was at the Hall of Fame backstage banquet, whatever it was. It looked like a cafeteria. It looked like the most mundane. And, yeah. And Roman was talking to Taker. I am fascinated by body language and behavior. So Taker is standing. Roman is sitting with his wife. Roman stands up to greet Taker. She doesn't stand up. He says, hey, this is my wife. Very nice to meet you. Pleased to meet you.
Yeah.
Roman's standing up. They cut to somebody to a talking head. And Undertaker seemingly loves talking to Roman. Because, yeah. I mean, he seems like a very affable person anyways. Like, he's talking to everybody like, you know, they're old. I mean, they're all old friends. But then in the next shot that we see, Roman has sat down and Taker is still standing up, which is a weird power situation, I guess, or a conversational dynamic. And I'm not saying it was any disrespect. It's just Roman's probably thinking, well, my wife's not standing up. I'm going to sit down. Roman might be thinking, I don't want to burden the Undertaker thinking he needs to talk to me.
Yeah.
They cut to a talking head. They cut back in row, and Undertaker has sit down as well.
Yes.
So he's like, I want to talk to Roman, and I'm going to pop a squat and sit next to him.
Yes.
I love watching that kind of stuff because the human condition makes me laugh.
Yeah, the interaction between Undertaker and all the wrestlers. I mean, there's that bit where Undertaker's checking into the hotel, and Roman rolls up next to him, and Taker says something like, oh, what about keeping kayfabe, brother?
Can't do it for 10 minutes. But then when they're talking about babies, that's the stuff that fascinates me the most. Yeah. Absolutely the most.
The human aspect of it. Yeah, definitely. Not the business side of things. Yeah.
And this just really made me miss Roman. It really did.
I know.
And it makes me miss the fact that they really don't capture. They have never, moments here and there, have they captured what makes Roman so appealing to probably mm-hmm. Vince and everybody who sees him in mm-hmm. person and meets him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, this guy totally can be the guy. And they've never really captured that with Roman.
No, they never really have. Roman seems affable. He seems humble. He just seems like a really good natured, down to earth dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at moments, yeah, they've, especially when he came back,
mm-hmm.
They seemed like, all right, be yourself, go be Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted a while until it kind of rolled back into the old habits of booking Roman. But yeah, you know, you see him in these unscripted backstage moments, just talking, or even in the interview bits, you totally see it. You see it from him. And I think, and you understand why people respect him so much, why he's a locker room leader, just how he carries himself. You totally get it.
Yeah.
You put him out in front of the camera with some mediocre to garbage creative, and it kind of gets lost in all that.
It gets lost in that. Speaking of locker room leaders, I thought that was another interesting segment where they talked about, a lot of the veterans talked about how Taker was a natural locker room leader. Everybody would go to him. There was some footage that I had never seen before that seemed, just extra stuff that had been shot through the years. There was a bit with Undertaker and Kurt Angle. And again, this might have been a documentary stuff and maybe a Kurt Angle DVD or an Undertaker one. I had never seen it before. And it was very quick stuff. There was one where he was talking to Matt Hardy and Lita, and they seem just enthralled by him. Mark Henry referring to the Undertaker as Don Corleone, I thought was pretty interesting.
But also Undertaker later on referred to
Michael Hayes.
Michael Corleone. When I'm out, they bring me back in.
Yeah, exactly.
There were several Godfather references in this.
Yeah, well, my favorite was Undertaker looked at how Michael Hayes was dressed and called him Don Corleone.
It was interesting to see a little bit of Triple H and Undertaker's relationship.
Yeah.
There was a point following Mania 30 where, leading to 31, where Undertaker's confidence was shaken.
Yes.
And he said Triple H backstage at Gorilla Position, where the only one that seemed to notice, went up to him, and they showed footage of this, and says, hey, essentially, like, you know who you are. Mm-hmm. Show him who you are. Mm-hmm. And Undertaker said that was enough to get him through that match with Bray Wyatt. Mm-hmm. And Bray was on there. It was like, I had no idea. He always presents this aura of being calm and being collected. And you would never know that he was doubting himself.
That was, whenever they get Bray to talk is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. Because he's honestly, like, he's probably going to be the next guy who is so protected character-wise. That, like, because I mean, there's been goofy stuff with Bray on the Edge and Christian show that's been amazing.
Yeah.
You never see that. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun to get his because here's the thing, Bray, when all is said and done, Bray is going to be the guy who has so much locked up here that anytime he talks in a shoot interview or whatever, it's going to be just must see. You know, because he so rarely talks, but he's such a fascinating guy. He really is.
He really is.
So any little bit you can get out of him is really cool. We mentioned the Jericho stuff, which is interesting. And I don't know. I don't know if on any given day, if Vince is like, hey, let's stick it to AEW by putting their champion or their former champion in this. Mm-hmm. And hey, let's stick it to AEW by not acknowledging Chris Jericho's history with WWE.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's that or if there is a rule. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know. But, you know, because their interaction, talking about the ramp and how it related to Taker's physical well-being at the time. Because obviously he was having some sort of lower body issues because he was limping around over the place, talking about the length of the ramp. Mm-hmm. And their exchange was interesting. And Jericho's little talking head bit following that was all right. But it didn't seem necessary.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It wasn't like a glue. It could have easily been cut. It could have easily been cut. So it is definitely an. Let me ask you something. So I jokingly brought this up the other day. So obviously this is something they were filming for a while.
Yeah.
Is this at all motivated by the Jordan Last Dance documentary? Because, and the only reason I bring this up, well, I bring it up for a couple of reasons. There were some editing botches in this.
Yeah.
As if they were, I'm not going to say rushing, but almost as if they were rushing, as if there weren't enough quality. It's rare. I don't think I've noticed it as much as I noticed it in this, in WWE documentaries of the past. Whenever they do one of these, most of the time I'll tune in. And within the span of a cut, they showed a reaction shot of a kid I think it was Survivor Series. It was when Hogan clothesline Undertaker out of the ring and Undertaker just stood there.
Yeah.
And they cut to the reaction of a kid but there's a small bit because the next shot was actually Hogan, but they cut that out and instead put a reaction shot in there. And there was that like two frames of Hogan. Mm-hmm. There is also like an audio botch 3 minutes later. And I didn't notice a whole lot after that. But part of me thinks, hey, there's this Last Dance thing going on that's like all over ESPN and everybody's talking about it. Now we have the last ride. I wonder if this was rushed into production or rushed into
the editing,
into post-production or whatever.
It's potential. There was a lot of like, there were some weird pacing issues, I thought, throughout where, you know, they have a stretch with some exposition from Undertaker and they'd have, you know, some B-roll or like little short montage bits that seemed to be lacking some sort of audio element to mm-hmm. connect the pieces together. They'd have these bits where it's B-roll or again, little edited section. They didn't have music really.
Yeah.
That felt kind of unfinished. That's, I mean, I did notice that one, that flash frame.
Yeah.
Editing mistake. But then the audio post-production was far more prevalent.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only reason I bring it up, and this is probably such a stretch, is that the Last Dance documentary is just as expansive in terms of who they're bringing on. And I wonder mm-hmm. I wonder if any of that motivated the Jericho being on there. Hey, yeah, Jericho is right now. We've got a no Jericho thing, but this supersedes all that. Just like the last with Jordan and the Last Dance.
Well, JR was in the first episode too, I believe.
JR was in there too. Yeah.
Because I mean, I imagine a lot of the stuff was shot, you know, 2017.
Yeah, when Jericho's obviously, he's got short hair. He looks like he did in 2017.
Yeah, but also I think some of the stuff it felt like was stuff that was maybe pulled from shoots mm-hmm. throughout the years too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like specifically the Vince stuff looked, I thought, felt more maybe older than 2017 just based on the hairstyle, but I could be wrong.
Oh,
on
yeah, that could be. That could be. The Vince stuff looked like it might have been Vince around the time Taker and Shane had their match, was like 2016, I think. That might be the case there. Wasn't Taker Shane 2016?
Yeah, it was 32, yeah.
32, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason I bring it up is because I did notice like some editing botches, and I'm like, I wonder if they rushed this in the production, and why would they have done that? Maybe to Capitol. I don't know.
Could be. It's entirely possible.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible.
WWE's weird. So, yeah, that's kind of all the notes that I took.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good though, and it is fascinating to hear him talk. He comes off, if they don't talk about the money, I won't be surprised. He comes off as sincere about, you know, protecting his legacy. Mm-hmm. Obviously people like money and they need money to survive. But he does come off as quite sincere about protecting his legacy. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, the Goldberg match, obviously.
Yeah.
See
how he feels about that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That angle they showed with the Mania match where he lands on his head. Boy, that's hard to watch every time.
That's bad. How explicit he is in terms of saying, my motivations for doing the Extreme Rules tag match was to erase the memory of that horrid Goldberg match from people's minds.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. I'm assuming, they said May 17th is the next one. So that's
I think these are going to be weekly for the duration. I don't know if they've said how many episodes are going to be. I don't recall, but I would suspect each and every Sunday for the next 6 to 8 weeks, 6 to 9 weeks.
Yep.
That'd be my suspicion.
And we'll be here covering them all, giving our thoughts just like that. Anyways, thanks everybody for tuning in. We appreciate it. Till next time, we'll talk to you later.
Goodbye.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.